In this role, he leads the development and implementation of policies that help create the conditions to improve and maintain a healthy population. He also serves as the current president of the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, ASTO. Dr. Montero serves on CDC's Board of Scientific Counselors for the Office of Infectious Diseases, as well as on an advisory group to CDC's director. He's a member of the Institute of Medicine Roundtable on Population Health and a member of the National State Policy Academy. In addition, he's a member of Dartmouth Medical School's Leadership Prevention Medicine Residency Advisory Committee and an assistant professor at both Dartmouth's Geisel Medical School and the University of New Hampshire School of Health and Human Services. Dr. Montero received his medical degree from the Universidad Nacional de Colombia, where he specialized in family medicine. He also holds degrees in epidemiology and healthcare delivery science. Thank you, Dr. Montero.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for spending your lunch nap time with us. This is the worst time for me to be in the audience because I most of the time fall asleep. So I'll be checking on you to see who is going through that. My intent with this presentation is not to talk a lot about New Hampshire, but to talk about what, from the national level, the organization that brings together all the public health directors is doing and how that is impacting and furthering the implementation of the policies that we just heard a second ago. So ASTO, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officers, brings together 59 public health commissioners, secretaries. Each one of us has a different name depending what the political structure of our states are. But we have the oversight of around 100,000 public health professionals, and clearly we are looking at the implementation of all of these policies at the state level or at the local level, depending the state where we are at. So clearly, as any other organization here in this event, we want people to be healthier. We want people not to get sick, so we can do the prevention and decrease events in illness and injury, transforming the healthcare as we move through the system. So how do we do things? We have the organization, and it says draft, forget the draft word. When I became president, I said, okay, public health has been changing. We got healthcare reform, is kind of being implemented, and we see that some states are saying, no, we won't, yes, we will, and then the Supreme Court came and said, you can choose if you expand Medicaid or not. That, for people like me, is not the decision that I would like the most. But then again, that is the way that our political system works. So when we have that, and we see that most people in most than half of the states in this country is going to get a health insurance card, what does that mean? So are they going to access what type of care? Where are they going to access that care? What type of services are they going to get? And what the quality of the services they are going to have? But beyond those states where they are, or we are, hopefully in my own as well, we will expand. We still don't know, which is interesting by the time of the year that it is. What are we going to do in those states that we don't? How do we manage and provide oversight in healthcare quality? And when we're talking about healthcare quality, how do we select this specific component around healthcare acquired infections? So something that I have been working for many years is sometimes we see each other as enemies, and we aren't. We are just part of the same branch in health. We do the public wraparound population-based services, and others do the delivery of the care services for those who are ill. How do we better integrate those from where we are today that seems as a different world? So we have several different ideas and several different proposals, and we are working on that. I said, well, we need to be able to measure, because just talking about it doesn't cut it. So not trying to reinvent the wheel, our job for the last year was look at stories of success in this integration of healthcare and public health, and how that advances the agenda for population health. So one thing that actually came as a great success story has to do with healthcare acquired infections. When we look at this, what are we trying to assess? Certainly, a public health department is not going to be providing hospital services in most cases. Hospitals are not necessarily going to be doing population health in most cases. Those are not exclusion worlds. We have seen that in several cases they are close together. But it cannot be seen only as well as the regulatory type of relationship. I write the rules, you just follow. End of the story. Because that doesn't work. History tells us that that doesn't work. It's not that we pay for it or that CMS pays for it. It's just that it doesn't work. So looking at this graphic that we took from the report from the Institute of Medicine published in April, March last year around integration, they said, well, you can continue to work in isolation or you can go to a full merger. I don't think that we should go to a full merger. It makes no sense to me. But somewhere in between, improving the type of cooperation that we have, the collaboration, and actually develop really strong partnerships, we are going to change the dynamics. In my state, we have been incredibly successful at this part of the partnership. We created a program maybe 5 years ago, and we had, this is one of these funny political stories, the legislature passed the law, created a program, and gave me $1. With $1, I could never say that the program was not funded. So it was funded. Actually, we were able to create the program with $1. And today we have a really incredibly successful partnership with the healthcare industry. We went to the hospital association and said, hey guys, you need this, we need this. I don't have money, you don't have money. I can move some EPIs around and help me create this program. We put a task group together, developed the program, choose the indicators, went to CDC, tap into the network, and made it work. When CMS came with the rules and regulations and asked the payers, you're going to do this, and Medicaid came and said, what do we do? I said, there, you have it for $1. And it's working. So it is how you do this type of partnerships, the ones that really will improve and change the dynamic. So at the national level, we start to look at examples like that and said, we need a roadmap for this integration. And we developed this. And this is not an integration talk, but I cannot not talk about integration if we're talking about healthcare acquired infections, because that is one of the key places of this interface. So we developed this joint map, and we are working with around 50-something organizations looking for ways to foster this. So we have the academic organizations who are training us. We have the payers. We have the professional organizations, American Academy of Family Physicians, Preventive Medicine, Nursing, you name it. We are all working toward this end. So what I did, so we asked people, okay, let's start reinvent the wheel. Tell me in your state an example of something that works. And we'll figure out, trying to skim through it, and figure out what are the elements that create success. Those are the lessons that we are told by our partners. You need resources, and resources are not always money. We tend, from a programmatic standpoint, to always say, okay, I need this full-time employee, this program, and this, and always try to look at it in isolation. But what we are finding out is that that's not necessarily the case. It doesn't hurt to have the money, though. Time. How do you choose? What do you do? It's the same discussion that we have in a clinical setting. I have to see so many patients. I have to do the payments. I have to do this. I don't have time to do more. But if you redesign the systems, you can really change and move this. And you go through this list, and they brings us to that. So we as an organization are cognizant of the fact that we are a federal union. So each one of us does it the way that we please. Each state is different. And don't tell me how to do it, because in my state, we are different. And in my big city, we are different. And in my local city, we are different. So trying to get us all organized is not easy. So we brought together a big group of experts, including local, state, and federal organizations, and said, okay, let's start dissecting this to make it work. So we look at all infectious diseases and look at the future. So what type of departments are we going to have? Where do we want them to be? So is this going to be a categorical independent program, isolated? Should be part of this design as we try to move forward? And we look at those places and created this document that talks about integration of public health and healthcare and looks at examples like the ones that we are talking. But then we went specifically looking for healthcare-associated infections, because that's the perfect place for us to be. We have really great examples of success, as I was saying, in my own state with $1 that we started the program, and we are way below the goals. No, sorry. Way above the goals, well below the numbers expected. So we have lower infections than most of the country. Now, New Hampshire, of course, we are small, 1.3 million people, mostly affluent as a state. The bottoms of the pockets of poverty are different than what you may see in a big city. But still, providing the care for people at the end of the day has the same challenges. And this discussion, it's different, actually at the end of the day isn't. We have the same struggles, the same professionals, and the same people and expectations. So that makes it really, really unique in some sense, but it works the same for everybody. So we look at this, made the progress, write the documents, and then start looking at my own state and realize that even though we are doing good, there are many things that we kind of didn't forecast. So what is the next steps for states like mine that are already working on this? Certainly, work with the feds in a more closer way to design those stages is critically important. How do we enhance the programs that we have? How do we transition those programs in a world of health information exchanges? So are we going to recreate the wheel? Are we going to bring our network of information that we have through CDC and try to blend it within the new federal design systems or suggested systems for health, for general exchanges? What role should we as public health agencies play on that is normally seen mostly as a healthcare delivery component? And how do we build that bridge is something certainly that we are trying to figure out, because this is about me always. Because every time that we have an issue, it's the public health director, the one that has to go public and say, don't worry, everything is going to be fine. And every time that you go public as a public health director, don't worry, everything is going to be fine, people don't believe you because you are a state government person. It gets complicated if it's even with a federal government person. So we had a really great system. We had everybody's reporting. And then suddenly you have hepatitis C. So you have four cases that match. Normally you said, okay, four cases, somebody's doing drug diversion, that your brain goes there. So how do you connect your drug prevention program, your hospital acquired infections, your employee records, your regular infection tracking, all in one? Because this is the setting that we have. So we had a lot of work in this particular outbreak. Many of you maybe saw it in the papers because it made all of the national papers. Even Scientific American had something to say about this a week or two ago. We ended testing 4,719 people, which is like half of the people in New Hampshire. Yeah. Why did we test so many people? If we have such great systems for prevention of healthcare acquired infections, why do we have situations like this where the risk goes crazy? Well, it's part of the checklist. It's part of designing a checklist and signing and just making the marks without really interjecting policies. We are all human beings and we know each other. It's not about the checklist only, it's about the culture and how you use the checklist to drive a cultural change. I see the doctors here, oh, great guy, yeah, he's always so funny and so friendly. Of course, you are, I'm not saying that you guys are, but if you are a drug addict always trying to get to the drugs, you need to be really friendly with the people who is taking care of that so you get the access. Are we thinking that our friends are doing drugs? How do we introduce those concepts within our checklist for healthcare acquired infection? But it's a drug, it's not an infection. Well, you know, when you are a drug user, you may have a higher chance of having some of hepatitis and some of these other things, and maybe your hygiene some days is not that good. So how do you interject and pull all of those policies together? Well, in paper it's easy, and we saw it, and it's in paper. But when you look at how you implement this, there are ways that we can improve dramatically. And that is what we ended testing for 1,000 people. When you look at this type of outbreaks in other states, they have tested less people and find it less cases. We found, at the end of the day, 32 people with active matching hepatitis C infection to this gentleman who did have a plea, a deal with the federal prosecutors, where he accepted that he did this. But he has not publicly recognized how he did it, which for us is a killer, because I am still assuming how he did this. But unless he tells me, I am still struggling with a couple of ideas that I have about how a few things happened here or there. But you see, this is the public health agency doing the investigation. Where is the public health agency doing the regulation? Where is the partner helping the population provide the services and the security and the safety that they need to go back and continue using this healthcare industry? You are not going to be the one who wants to close your local hospital. They need the care, the employees need the work, the economy needs the money, and we need the services. So how do we negotiate those situations in so visible situations like this? And of course, we prove that there is a lot of people who may have hepatitis C that don't know they have it, because we found them, which tied the new regulations on hepatitis C. So healthcare acquired infection is not just about the surgical procedure. It's way beyond that. And all of the risks that we need to look at as states go beyond those things, because we need to learn how to work with prosecutors. I didn't talk to so many lawyers in such a short period of time in my life, and I hope that I don't have to do it ever again. How different, and the access that they have to things that we don't, is sometimes really interesting. And by partnering with them, we were able to tap into something that was missed, and is that this gentleman has done this before in 5 more states, and they missed it. Up to a point, fired from several places for drug use, but patients were not tested. Again, because this didn't fit the checklist that we have for what we need to follow. And we need to be incredibly mindful and careful on those type of things. We had 5 states with cases. Maybe we shouldn't have to have this in New Hampshire. But stuff does happen. And then a couple of weeks ago, we had another funny one. Well, not really funny. We had this patient diagnosed with suspected to have CJD. So, of course, what do? We do an investigation. We go back and find out that this person, with those clinical symptoms that I'm not going to read here, have had surgery months ago. Brain surgery, open surgery. So you need to go and open those records and see what happened, how did it happen, and what equipment was used. And then you start to find another world. Is how do you track equipment after an event when you don't know that the event has happened? So we all work around infections and hospitals. So you get the surgical kit. Does the surgical kit only exclusively goes for this type of surgeries, and then it gets packed, cleaned, and put in storage until the next craniotomy? Or do you take pieces apart? And if you take pieces apart, where do they go? Do you know? And the reality is that nobody does. Several of those kits are closed and you keep them, but some pieces are taken away. So doing that risk assessment is an incredibly interesting situation. We did all of the risk assessment and identified at the end 8 patients who have had neurosurgery with the same pieces of equipment in the same hospital. And they were properly clean when you don't have CJD. Then what do you clean for? Do we really want to get every piece of equipment cleaned for CJD, which basically means ruin them? No, of course not. So how do we develop policy that is sensible enough to prevent most of what we want, but not being financially impossible? And that's something that we as states do have to figure out and work with our federal partners when it goes to JCO, to the Joint Commission regulations, or to what CMS will pay for. Because at the end of the day, the payers drive, as you said, a lot of what gets done. So we work on that. But then, you know, when something is going bad, they say, wait, there is more. We had that. So wait, there is more. We found out that the kit, there was a particular piece of equipment that was lent to another hospital. So we went to the hospital for the records. Those of you who work in hospitals, do you keep records of every piece of equipment that a particular surgeon brings because they love that piece and then goes back to a different hospital? No, we don't. And it's not just in New Hampshire. This happens all across the country. When we look then about how do we track these healthcare acquired infections, the next generation of things, as we get rid and we start retiring measures of what we have been able to control today, may drive us to a whole different new game of things, possibilities, and policies that we are not even contemplating. Because then, wait, there is more. Beyond that piece, we found that Medtronic lent them a piece of equipment that they were doing a demo. So they use a great piece of equipment here, then you open, it works perfectly fine, and then return it to the company, who then lent it to another neurosurgeon in a different state, and from there went to another state, and then came back to the first state, and then went back to the other state. So we had to track this type of things. Hospitals don't do that. That is where the integration between us works. But then if each state has different rules and regulations, what gets reportable and when you report it, it becomes a little tiny bit complicated for us to manage. And that is where an organization like the one that I what used to be the president brings this and help us create joint approaches nationally. That's the role that we can play. Now, the other thing that we are doing from an ASTO perspective is to increase health agency capacity to address those healthcare acquired infections through doing inventories of policies so we know what others are doing, what works and what doesn't. And I want to always emphasize that what doesn't, because we seldom do negative data, and we should do it more so we don't try to reinvent the wheel and all find out that, yeah, no, it really doesn't work for the 20th time. We brought stakeholders, look at these policies, and did that work. And then we are doing some legislative tracking, because every now and then in some states there are people who tries to, well, we're disclosing too much. We shouldn't be talking about this. So how do we keep track of those so we all have properly drafted and enforced rules that allows for public release of information? And now some of the things that we are doing, you will find in that table, some of the documents that we have produced, and you can contact our own staff. Kathy Talkington, who is the chief of infectious diseases for the organization, is here with some members of our staff. So anything that you want to know or hear from ASTO, she will be able to help you out. And these are three things that we are working on right now. So helping to build capacity. And as I was talking, how do we get into these electronic health records, and what does that mean? It's good for outbreaks, but how do we identify specific situations, procedures, individualized conditions? It's a little trickier because coding issues. Certainly, we're doing an examination of what has helped in states that have really good programs and what are the barriers in those that don't. And then because ARRA, this federal money that came a couple of years ago, specifically proposed and funded partnerships in several states to improve healthcare acquired infection prevention, then we are doing an assessment in how did it work? And if it did work, how can we use the experiences so we all can move into that world? So that is basically, in summary, what we are doing as a state. As a state, also organizing us to keep track of all of these different things. And you clearly see the cascading between the federal perspective, how they are bringing all of their federal family, and how we at the state level, as the ones who implement those policies, are working it, but how at the same time we're trying to coordinate between us. Because even though federal law is only one, each state is different. and how do we manage, implement those, and coordinate between the different systems, licensing groups, because they are not in the same agencies, the investigatory groups, the policy developers, the infection people, and the tracking people, to bring all of this together to do what we all want, that is healthier populations. So thank you very much. Thank you.